out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 1st of May, 2018. It's Beltane today. And of course, I'm joined by Nat Danelaw as it's Tuesday. Nat, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. You know, it is the Workers' International, you know, Labor Day. So, you know, I'm enjoying my day off. And likewise, you know, it's a good day. The Nordic Resistance Movement have been out marching. It was a glorious display once again from the Nordic Resistance Movement marching in two Swedish cities at the same day with an impressive amount of people present, considering that this is, technically speaking, a working day where people are supposed to be working. But the Nordic Resistance Movement managed once again to impress by displaying a massive amount of people on the street and likewise act deeply professionally. It's truly a joy to watch this amount of functional organization.
Well, that shows real dedication on a day when people are working. People must have taken time off to go on this demonstration. And we need to have demonstrations against what they've done to May Day, really. The left have hijacked it. It was it's a festival that we've observed for centuries, millennia, really, May Day. It was called Beltane, and it symbolized the beginning of the summer, and we would have bonfires. It had nothing to do with Jewish Marxism, and now it's been hijacked by communists. So I think it's, you know, good on Nordic Resistance Movement for demonstrating against it and showing that it's not the left that really care about the workers. It's nationalists that care about workers. I mean, we can see that from looking at our left in Britain.
National socialists. They actually went under a parole, taking away, you know, and pretty much taking back May Day under the parole, "We are not politicians, we are the people." And they had brilliant slogans like, you know, "People's unity, national socialists," and so forth and so on.
That's the best thing about them, really, is, you know, they're so proud of being national socialists. You know, and we're proud to have them as national socialists because they make the rest of us look really good. You know, I'm so sick of, you know, the press points calling people Nazis and coming up with this image of the tattooed skinhead. And then you see real national socialists, you know, and they're the sort of people you want to know. They're the sort of people that look trustworthy and honourable and decent. And yeah, I look forward to seeing this march and hearing more about it later, Nat. We do need to be showing people that we are good, honest, upright people and we have their interests at heart. We're not like the left. We're not saying we want to take lots of money and give it to people. That's not how we want to equalize things. We want to equalize things by giving people a hand up so that they can help themselves. That's what National Socialism is having a bit of help so you can help yourself, not taking from other people to give it to people that don't deserve it, like we have for the welfare
state. We don't wish to see the people on life support. We would rather see the people being able to flourish and make their own lives and live and flourish.
Well, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And this is what we need to be working towards. And we need to have the networking and we need to have communities. I was out at this weekend at a conference in Britain. And it wasn't famous speakers from abroad. It was nationalist speakers from in Britain. And it's just really good to be around other nationalists and network. and get contacts and get details from people that can, you know, could help you out in various ways. I've got three or four business cards here of people that, you know, I can work with along with Radio Aryan, and others there would have made contacts as well. And we're setting up a prisoner welfare organization. And these are all the sorts of things you can't do if you're just doing what you do online. You need to meet people in real life and form relationships with them and work together with them. We can't just shitpost all day and think you're going to achieve anything by that. You know, that's good in one way, but we need to be doing both, I think.
I mean, we also were relying too heavily on a cartoon frog-led people. we also were dead when they Kekistanis. We also were dead when.
Yeah, thankfully that's gone, and hopefully it's not coming back. But you know, we cannot just be doing what we do online. I think is the point that we need to be making. What was the subject that you wanted to talk about today, Nat? You were telling me about before we went on air.
Well, you know, in the context of people celebrating workers' rights and fixed incomes and the welfare system and paying 65% in taxes, I think it would be fitting to talk about the ever-increasing inflation that is happening all across Europe, all the while, of course, the Federal Reserve and the Rothschilds are indeed filling their pockets with ever-growing debt. But I would like to talk about, of course, the most obvious of critiques of the welfare state and what you could call the welfare plutocrats, and the eternal populist strife of our current mainstream politicians. Or should I just call them living bread politicians? I would like to talk about the general critique to give out to what you could call the democratic structure, like we gave, you know, we talked about in the Down to Basics episode, where we talked about why, you know, democracy is cancerous and, you know, puts all of the cells in the, you know, body of the nationhood against one another, you know, mutations and internal war against itself. You know, it's unhealthy, it's cancer. And I would likewise try and create a picture and define audience of RadioAryan.com about the new era. I would like to perhaps give some light on the rising of the phoenix. You know, the old burned down, giving room for the new to arise, more fiery and glorious than ever seen before.
Well, that sounds good. That definitely sounds good. That's a good image to picture is the phoenix, because that's what it does. It arises from the ashes. But what you were talking about there with inflation, it's all linked in with the welfare state and with Marxism. Inflation comes about because we have usury in our banking system, and there is never enough money in circulation to pay back the debt, because there's always interest added to the debt. So you have to have the money supply has to keep inflating just so that you can pay back the previous debts. And in order to create more money, you have to loan out more money. So there has to be even more debt. So you end up with infinite debt. You end up with things not being worth what they were a couple of years back, or people no longer being able to afford to buy houses, say, because inflation has put the price of the houses up so much. And all of this is down to the usurious banking system. And that is not what the leftists will tell you about. They won't tell you about usury. The left will point to rich people and say, these rich people have got all the money, so you should take the money from them. And some of those rich people might have that money through hard work, or they might have it because they've inherited it. But the ones that have it through usury, they are the ones that are funding the Marxism. They're the ones like George Soros that are funding these leftist groups. So it's all tied in together, and the left will try to hide the fact that it's usury that is the source of these problems and the source of the inflation. It goes right back to the money supply, and that's what Marx hid. That was the essential thing that Marx hid with his book on Capital and Marxism. And that's the main difference between Marxism and National Socialism, because National Socialism exposed the usurers. I think it was a Gottfried Feder, his book, Breaking...
Gottfried Feder.
Yeah. And he wrote a book, Breaking the Debt to Interest Slavery, something like that the title was. And he wrote that in, I think, around about 1910. So So it's 100 years we've known this. But you can contrast that with Marx, who was just saying, get jealous of those rich people and take it from them, which is class war. Yeah, it's just stoking jealousies and envy and saying, going after the rich people and take it from them. And while that's going on, the bankers are just rubbing their hands together because they know that society's going to fall apart and nobody's going to be able to put up any resistance against them, which is what we see happening all around us. I just wanted to point out that all of those things that you brought up there now, that they're all linked together. And in a national socialist state where you don't have usury, where, you know, you don't expect to get something for nothing, then you don't have the inflation and you don't have the class warfare and you have people looking out for one another. But you can only have that if it's based on a single ethnicity. It won't work with multiculturalism.
It's funny that you mention Gottfried Feder. I actually have the book right in front of me here. He wrote Manifesto for Breaking the Financial Slavery to Interest. And he actually shows a very interesting graph in here that shows from, you know, it was recorded in 1922 to 1919. He showcased how industrial capital completely stagnates and how the Rothschild Fund through loan capital manages to exponentially rise its interest compared to, you know, the mere investors in industrial capitalism itself. So it shows how usury and essentially debt it functions in its own world compared to legitimate production and valuation of produce. But just to bring some perspective into the everlasting increase of debt, let's have a look at the Danish crown. From what I remember, one Danish crown is worth, I think it's 5 kroner is worth $1, and £1 in the value of kroner is, I think it's 9 kroner, just about. From the year 1945, 1 crown nowadays is worth 21 crowners. Now, that essentially means an inflation increase of 2030.5% through, you know, the end of the Second World War to 2017. That means that there is a constant increase of inflation on 4.3% per year. Now, to the untrained eye, some people would say, well, that's good. It just means that there's more people. And of course, naturally, then inflation will increase. Well, to a certain degree, that is true. However, it's also true that we no longer follow the gold reserve, the golden standard. So, you know, people just exponentially expand the sources of money in such a way that it's next to worthless. Now, while all this is going on in Denmark, I think it was back in 2016, we got promised higher wages here in Denmark. They promised us that throughout the next 3 years, we would get an increase of, I think it was 3.7% for out the next 3 to 4 years. However, as this was declared, they also promised us that for each year, prices on everyday goods would be increased by 0.8%. So essentially that wage increase means next to nothing. Now, all the while this is going on, because the public sector saw that here in our country that, wow, the private sector is now making more money, this must mean that we deserve more money as well. So the public sector promised that they would strike. And inevitably, the government promised that, well, if you guys, you 170,000 public workers, decide to strike, we will make a lockout and lock out 750,000 public employees from their work. So take that. So this has led to a lot of back and forth, you know, deal makings between the public sector, the public employees, and the state. Now, what this ended in is that, you know, the public employees, the workers in the state, they of course got what they wanted, but they never really thought about what that would actually entail, because our country has not actually gotten richer. as it is right now, Denmark, just like most other European nations, is putting great money into what you can only call the European version of the Federal Reserve, which of course is likewise owned by, you know, the Rothschild Fund. So what's going on is that they got promised that throughout the next 8 years, they will get a total wage increase of 8.7%, which means that an ordinary soldier, for an example, who would normally make, I think it's 24,000 a month, he will get an additional 1,770 kroners a month. However, after inflation, you know, compared to our current wages and the current valuta value we have, that the actual amount of money that would be worth would only be 681 kroners. So it's not 1,700 kroners they're getting, it's 600 kroner they're getting due to inflation. That's the actual value of the money.
Just less than half, less than half there. And you, when Gottfried Feder was writing, as you point out, we still had the gold standard then, and yet compound interest was, you know, it was outstripping the industrial capital. Before then, if you had capital and you invested it in industry, you would have to wait until the industry made some money, and then you would make some money from the top of that. That's the natural way to do things. You invest in something, and then you take the same risk as the people that you invested the money in, whether it's going to make a profit or not. If it doesn't make a profit, you don't make a profit. Now, if you have compound interest, then that's guaranteed money to come back on the loan. Now that is bad enough as it is, because the person loaning out the money is not taking any risk. But since they separated it from the gold standard, there isn't anything to actually back up this money. They just write out a check or a note in the ledger book, the balance book, every time you ask for a loan. So when you're asking for a loan, you're saying, I owe you a certain amount of money, and I will pay that back in a certain amount of time. They then create the funds from that promise that you've made to pay it back. And there is only so much money in the system that can be created like that. If you say, I want to borrow £10, and they create £10, that £10 goes in circulation. Now that £10 could be paid back because there's £10 in circulation, but they don't want £10 back. They want interest back on top of it. They want another 25% on top of it. And the only way that other 25% can get into circulation is if somebody else takes another loan out. So you end up with masses and masses and masses of debt, and you can't stop it because everything will collapse if you do. It's built into the system that it's going to collapse. And when it collapses, then they can buy everything up. Because it doesn't matter if things are under inflation, if you are the one that's writing the money out. If you're the one that's creating the money, inflation doesn't matter. You can pump it up and pump it up until nobody can afford anything. Then you can crash it all and you can buy everything at rock bottom prices. And this is exactly what they did in Weimar. And this is what's happening now. I mean, what is the point in giving somebody a pay rise if everything around them, the inflation is going to cause it to cost more and more and more money? And one of the things linked in with this, I read a lot of old books on history, and I was reading a book about Flavius Josephus and his histories of Judea. And it was working out at the time, it was working out what the exchange value was for the coinage that was used at the time. And they worked it out and they said, so this is how much this was worth, this is how much that was worth, this is how much an acre of farmland was worth, all that sort of thing. And it remained the same. There was nothing put in there for inflation. And that, you know, and that says to me that just, you know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, they never had inflation. They never had anything like that. They were able to say, this is how much something was worth, and it's always been worth that amount going right back 2,000 years. But now you can't say that. You know, in 10 years, the price of houses can double just in 10 years. And we think it's just normal because it's always been that way. But it's not necessary. It's not necessary.
The reality of the matter is that perpetually things are going to get more and more expensive, and it all goes in coalition with how we make more and more wages. It doesn't make a difference. It's a scam. It fools people into thinking that they're making more, but they're not. You know, if you took a person from 1945 and you brought him into today's world to look at prices, he would, you know, probably be shocked to see how much, you know, prices have increased over time.
And part of it, and I say another side of it is as well, is the baby boomer generation that have got their houses that are worth lots of money, and they were bribed in effect. They would buy a house for £20,000 and it's now worth £1 million. So they were bribed. Yeah. They could buy things cheaply and they could see the price of the houses going up. And oh yes, I'm rich. I'm no longer working class. I'm middle class now. And they were in effect bribed, because what they didn't see was the fact that their children were then never going to be able to afford to buy a house. It's a really nasty thing to do, because it drives a wedge in between young people and old people by doing this as well. Do you see what I mean? It's almost like bribery. I'm not blaming, you know, the boomer generation.
Well, maybe you should a bit, maybe just a tiny bit. I mean, keep in mind the boomers are debatably the worst generation that has ever existed. And they have likewise helped with creating one of the next worst generations that has ever existed, Generation X, no offense. And then, honestly, the millennial generation, my generation, is also pretty shit. I mean, it's just hedonism upon hedonism and atomization upon atomization, more and more individualism for each generation. And here we are, 2018, year of the Lord. And people still think that perpetually buying new nigger tech every year is the highest goal.
I think that's a good point you make there. I mean, the boomers were a bad generation, but so is this generation. I do think, you know, we have
we're
the
shitty
internet now,
in our
but they
own
didn't
special
then.
Ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think, you know, if we'd been around 40, 50 years previously, I don't think we would have done things any differently, because we've got the same genes. You know, we haven't got any more than they have. We haven't got any less than they have. But what we have got today is we've got the internet, which they didn't have. So it was very hard for them to access this information, whereas we can access this information, but we're still in the same situation. We've still got traitors that are in power, the same traitors that have been in power for the last 70 years. And, you know, the British people, how could they work out that Adolf Hitler was the good guy when all the propaganda that they got was saying, well, he's the bad guy? You know, we didn't know that he'd got rid of usury and that our whole banking system ran on usury. We thought it was stable and it worked on the gold standard. And then after the war, the prices started to increase and people were suddenly very wealthy because of it. And they didn't think far enough ahead to think, well, what's that going to do to the next generation? But the way to fix all of this is to have a nationalist state, a national socialist state, that takes usury out of the system and takes private bankers out of the system. You know, it's the government that should be issuing funds. It's the government that should have its own central bank. And if you had it that way, you could pay out dividends to the nation. If the nation, you know, the nation worked hard and created stuff, it would be paid a dividend rather than having to pay taxes. You'd be having a share in the profits, because the whole nation together does a lot more than one man can do. You know, we can create things together as a nation. And that's what National Socialism was about, and getting the workers talking to the bosses instead of having unions, which are set up, again, to cause friction between the bosses and the workers. You need, like the fascist idea of the corporation, which is now a dirty word, corporation, incorporate. But it was basically guilds. It was a new term for the workers' guild, which you'd always had in the Middle Ages. And in the Middle Ages, we had a just price for things that people needed. The government would subsidize things if they were scarce. Whereas now, if things are scarce, they'll put the prices up. And again, that goes back to hyper-individuality, the individual has a right to make the most profit out of the people around him, which is a Jewish idea. Nobody should have the right to make the most profit out of everyone around him, because he relies on everybody around him. We all rely on each other. That you know, that the nation is an extension of the family, and you need your family around you. You need to be able to rely on people. They're not there for you to make a profit out of their misery. And the whole system that we have is based on capitalizing on other people's poor situations and misery and making a profit from it. And you know, that's what leads to the situation we're in today. And adding in diversity to that and non-whites just makes the situation worse. These are the things that need cleaning up. These are the things that the Phoenix is going to need when it arises from the ashes to remake itself and rebuild itself. And it needs to rebuild itself in a way that conforms with the natural order. And usury goes right against that.
You just described the very gasoline that is being poured all over the regime right now. Hyper-individualism, diversity, rootlessness. You just described what is actually going to happen. Because I have noticed that throughout the, you know, generation for generation, people have gotten more and more rootless. The more rootless people become, you will always find an expanding factor of people seeking roots, finding identity, understanding and researching a natural order, logos. And what I have found is that the Generation Z, as they're called, set, the new generation of the young whippersnappers, I have noticed that these people are growing up in debatably the worst epoch of world history. A time where they're constantly shamed, where they have to pay for the burdens of foreign hordes coming in with their brain-dead, blank looks in their eyes, holding their hand out, saying, as they demand more and more, never showing gratitude. We see the new generation. Our numbers are ever-increasing. The millennials, Generation X, very mobilized. Lots of people who are getting involved in the fight on those fronts. But the next generation, who is completely rootless, disinvested, completely uninvested, total system dropout of the current values in society, that is where the fuel of revolution will be found. That is what is going to ignite the gasoline. That is which is going to burn down the old to give way for the new. The mighty phoenix rising from the ashes of old decadence, plutocracy, welfarism, social democracy, liberalism, capitalism, you mention it. All archaic, useless ideas of what you could call dead old men. That doesn't matter anymore. They are all noble losers. They hold no significance to anything anymore. The new way, our path, is the true path. And the winds are changing. I think ultimately total Aryan victory is within our grasps. The new generation will cave way for it. We have to guide them.
It always has been within our grasp. I mean, again, this is why they push miscegenation so much, because all the while that people are still white, then that call of the blood will always be there. And it doesn't matter how much they push the hyper-individualism, there will always be this yearning for something else, this understanding that there is something else out there. There's another way of doing things. What is it? There will always be that call so long as people are white. And so long as people are white, we will always be able to rebuild our civilization. It's been done many times before. That is the essential part, the essential biological component to it all, is that you are white, you are European. And that's why they push the miscegenation so much. That's another part of why they keep bringing these hordes into our countries, because they know that once the blood is contaminated, we won't be able to fight back. We'll be in the same situation that Egypt is in. We'll be in the same situation that South America is in, or that India is in. None of them can provide any resistance whatsoever to this banking system. They're not able to maintain civilizations themselves. Just look at the great civilization that once was Egypt, and now look at the place. I mean, it's a dump. It's full of terrorism. They're all low IQ. There's no way they could even build one of those pyramids today on their own. It relies upon having white blood, pure, unadulterated white blood. And if you are still white, then that call is going to be there. And that's why there has always been a nationalist resistance in the last 70 years since the war. And they'll never be able to stamp it out, because it's natural to us. It is natural to us to see when something is wrong and try to fix it. And then people will learn about the right way to go about doing that. And as you say, now it's up to us to make sure that information is out there, and make sure that we meet with young people that we can talk to and explain these things. This is why it's important to go to nationalist meetups, because you will meet with people from all generations there. You'll meet with people in their 60s, in their 70s, in their 30s, in their 20s. You'll meet with teens there. And everyone there is dedicated to the same thing. They're all dedicated to the good of our race and the good of our nation. And that is what matters. And that's what eventually is going to pull us through and burn everything down to the ground and reform it all again, as the Phoenix does, as you, as the allegory that you said earlier, Nat. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.